So the topic is on the role of the council, and this topic was came out of a discussion we had in Brussels during our wrap-up session, if you remember. Now, in the sheet in front of you, you have a brief description of what the topic's about, and the idea is to try and better understand what the role of the council is. Now, why has this question come up now? Part of it is due to the GNSO restructure and the fact that we've undergone a few changes over the past few months and years that leave some people unsure of what exactly the GNSO Council's role should be. So perhaps I can start by just putting forward in the discussion some of the questions that were asked. Obviously, the first one being what the role of the council is, and the second one, just as important in my view, is what the role of the council is not, i.e., what should the council be doing and what shouldn't it be doing? Now, basically, the role of the council today, if we want to summarise it to the extreme, is as the manager of the policy development process. Now, once you've said that, it's clear to some people what that means. It's not clear to everybody. So perhaps I can open up the discussion at this stage just initially to get a few comments or questions forward from people on what they see the role of the council as being, and I think just as importantly, what they think, which areas they don't want to see the council going into. Does anyone want to start that discussion off? Jeff, I see you've got your mouth full, so that's probably bad timing.
I think it's a good question that you're asking, but I think this group should be asked that question, but I'd actually like that question posed to the stakeholder groups. I'd like to hear what the stakeholder groups believe the role of the council is, as well as what we all think it is. Because I think, you know, I'm glad this is another topic that I'm glad is on the agenda, and I in fact had raised some issues in Brussels during the council meeting on this very topic. At that point in time, there were some things that had come out that seemed to me a little bit more substantive policy making versus the management role. Those things included, there was at the time there was a letter on IDNs and new GTLDs, and forgive me because the exact substance is not coming to my head exactly what it was, but there was a notion, there was a letter drafted by council, and until I raised the issue, council just seemed okay with drafting the substance of what the policy should be and sending it straight to the board, and there was no kind of public comment period or any time for the stakeholder groups to really consider it. And that, to me, crossed the line of management versus policy. There was a second example that I wrote down that was... hold on while I go back to my page here. Right, on the vertical integration. So while the vertical integration working group was going on and doing its work, and we all know that it didn't have any conclusions, but... while that work was going on, in Brussels, there was a substantive discussion between members of the council and members of the board on vertical integration, which, as I was not a councillor at the time, as a member of the vertical integration working group, we had been asking the board, I don't know on how many occasions, please give us clarity on what you meant by your March resolution, or, you know, what are your concerns? What are the things that you guys are talking about? And they refused, to put it bluntly, they refused to talk to the working group. In fact, I think the very first working group meeting, a couple board members showed up and actually did a little talking. And from what I heard, they were chastised after it, and they never talked again on any working group call. In fact, I don't even think they showed up. They were pretty much told not to show up and not to contribute. So those two areas, especially the latter one, where there's substantive discussions on policy between the council and the board are things that we really should try to avoid, or if it happens, they should happen in an open environment and one in which minutes or other things are referred to the community. My view of what the council should be is of the management process, and like you said, Stefan, it's hard to exactly put into words, but there are certain things when it comes to, if you're commenting on policy, especially where there's an existing working group in place, then that's probably something the council should not be doing as a council, but rather leave either to a working group if the board wants to know something, but it should not be the managers in that position.
Marilyn?
Thank you, Stefan. I'm going to speak in my capacity as the chair of one of the constituencies to pose a question, and so let me start out by saying that the GNSO is a supporting organization. The council is focused on policy, management, and coordination of GTLD policy. Having been here forever, and having helped write some of those words along with some other people in this room in the early days of the DNSO, and then Sherpa-ing through changes, I think we were pretty clear that the function of the council is policy. Now, the other thing to keep in mind is that the GNSO is composed of stakeholder groups and of constituencies, all of whom have executive leadership teams. And, of course, the policy counselors in all cases are part of those leadership teams, whether they are on the ExecCom directly or just participating in it. I do think we need to distinguish between governing the SO, which I think has to be done by the elected leadership of the constituency slash SGs, versus driving, managing, operating, coordinating policy development process. So let me give an example. We're going to talk about the toolkit in a little bit. The toolkit impact is, I don't know what the right percentage is, but let's say it's 40% focused on the work of the policy process, and 60% focused on support for potential support for constituencies and stakeholder groups. The agenda, unless we allow and expect the elected leadership of the constituencies slash stakeholder groups to speak on that topic, the agenda would force the counselors to assume responsibility and accountability for dealing with administrative matters that are of impact to their constituencies. So when thinking about the role of the council, I think we also have to think about the role of the elected leadership in each of the subunits, whatever they are, within the GNSO. And I will just say I really don't think, if this is a GNSO working session, which I would be happy for it to be, then we have to remember that that is it's an SO, and the council doesn't govern the SO. So we need to think, when we put our agenda together, how do we make sure we get the participation from other experts that support the council in its policy work?
If what you're saying is that the group chairs that make up the council should be more involved in a two-way discussion with the council rather than the council working on its own and the group chairs working by themselves. I on a personal level, I thoroughly agree. I think we're still settling into new processes, and through the last year from Nairobi to Brussels to here, we've tried various combinations of things for these weekend meetings, for example, to try and make sure, you know, accommodate people better and make sure people are able to participate better, be it by having seats at the table or being able to talk or whatever. But there's no area right now that I can identify where for example, the council leadership can talk to the group leadership, get together, and maybe that's something that we need to look forward to as a suggestion. That's something that we need to look to going forward.
I just want to make one point. I really don't. I think we can draw a quasi bright line between the policy function that must belong to the council versus administration, management, those kinds of things. So I do think we need to protect the space of leadership that the council has in the policy area.
Thanks. Tim?
And just quickly on that, and then I have some comments on the council's role. But I agree too that I think with the comments that Marilyn made as far as the GNSO being the SO and keeping that in mind, et cetera. But one thing I would want to mention is that I think that sometimes the face-to-face meetings that we have like this, we don't take effective advantage of our face-to-face in doing council work. We have a meeting every 3 weeks over the phone. We don't get together face-to-face every 3 weeks. We get together face-to-face every 3 or 4 months. So it would be great to have an opportunity to work on council business a little bit more face-to-face. And that, I'm not saying that has to be closed or anything of that nature, but just something I wanted to throw out there. As far as the council's role goes, one thing that I think that is important to me, and I am a counselor, but I'm also a stakeholder group member as well, the registrars, and that is that that the council, while managing the processes, should also defend the principles that I think the stakeholder groups expect to be applied based on bylaws and ICANN's mission, et cetera, of bottom-up consensus building activities, accountability, transparency, even to some extent predictability. And I think at times we perhaps don't focus enough on those issues and focus more on, if you will, pork barrel type of activities where we're, you know, promoting or lobbying things that are basically in the interest of our stakeholder group and not necessarily in the interest of the ICANN community as a whole. So I think we should not forget that we should be defending the principles that I think the people who are involved in these processes expect. And to that end, I think one of the things we're going to be talking about coming up, perhaps, and that is in regards to the community working groups. And I think there's several things that we need to consider in that regard, and so hopefully we'll have a healthy attendance and conversation in that topic as well. Thanks.
Thanks, Tim. That topic is at 1 o'clock, 1 to 2, by the way, just in case anyone's wondering. And just before I put it over to you, Rosemary, can I just say, if there's anybody online that wants to participate, please make yourselves known and we'll accommodate that. Rosemary.
Yes, I just wanted to follow up Marilyn's comments, and I think this relates to my own inexperience with this whole process. The distinction between GNSO Council and GNSO, if I'm understanding right, the GNSO Council is the body for concentrating on managing policy development process. But the suggestion is that GNSO, the wider organisation, is the body for looking at administrative matters. And so it's a clarification, firstly, for me. Secondly, though, the suggestion that we need some structure where the heads of stakeholder groups engage with GNSO, which is why I need to understand more clearly what's the distinctions that are being drawn. Because I know in our non-commercial stakeholder group, our stakeholder group chair, Avery, is not really in any way connected with what we're doing at the council or on the GNSO. And it's something that's troubled me for a while, and I haven't really understood how to make that structural link so that we get the communications processes flowing smoothly and we take advantage, in our case particularly, of considerable expertise.
That's one of that's the point I was making, that we do need some kind of way to involve or to talk to the chairs better. Really, there's no way to do so right. Well, there's we don't need a formal way of doing so. What I'm suggesting, for example, we have with Olga and Chuck, we prepare each council meeting with a council leaders meeting. We could have a council leaders council group chairs meeting, for example. That could be an informal thing that could happen every 2 months or something. It's just that conversation, I think, needs to be more. Well, it needs to happen more often, but I'm not suggesting that any formal ways of doing that. Did you want to respond? And then, Adrian.
I do. The GNSO is a supporting organization, right? It's one of many, one of several. It coexists along with advisory groups and the ASO. It is the, and the ALAC, in terms of fulfilling a larger responsibility to ICANN as a whole. And so the constituencies and the stakeholder groups generally provide a aggregation and a working space for parties who have particular interest to also come together and talk about larger issues having to do with governance of the organization. Governance of the organization is not the job of the GNSO Policy Council, right? So while you guys may have discussions about the impact of the budget or the operating plan on the policy development process, I think that generally I would say within the CSG and within the BC that many of our members would want to talk about broader issues related to governance of ICANN, including maybe the, and many of the members of the BC submit individual comments on different public comment processes related to governance of ICANN. I personally do not think that work belongs at the council, and I think you would not be able to do your job and a critical job of GNSO, of GTLD policy council, of policy coordination and management, should you take on the governance, so to speak, of the SO. The SO is composed of subunits who ought to be self-governing. And I think that's what all the constituencies and stakeholder groups believe. I think also it's not the job of the council to dictate to the stakeholder groups or the constituencies how they organize. It may be the council's job as a whole to give a request to each of those groups about how they're more effective in supporting policy work. But that's perhaps just my view.
Adrian, did you want to say something?
I think two things. Number one, Rosemary brought up that she doesn't feel that AVRI is connected. From what I can see in the comments that AVRI sends to the council list, I think she's extremely connected with what's going on the council. Maybe that's just her personality, and maybe she's a diamond in the rough. But my second point is, I think we also need to be conscious of the workload of the chairs of each of the stakeholder groups. I know that Mason, in the registrar stakeholder group, is incredibly busy keeping all of us, herding cats, if you will, in our group with such a vast number of members. So I would just stress that I think you need to consider their bandwidth once again.
Philip, and then Wolf.
Thanks. I think it's a very timely session, and I think for me one of the difficulties in the restructuring and the conceptual idea of the council managing the policy process as opposed to the council being more intimately involved in the policy process as it had been in the past is not just the change of emphasis there, but the fact that the council remains a set of elected representatives with a set of votes to cast. And I think we need to rationalize what it is, ultimately, that those elections to be representatives and the function of those votes is, and the importance of that, in order to understand what concept of managing the process is, because there's a danger if it's merely an administrative body, you could you could appoint three people and get them to manage a process that's done by community stakeholders or so. But there is a point about the nature of the election and the nature of casting votes. I think for me that's the essence of it. So I think, and that's why I think it's a question we're asking ourselves now.
Thanks. So I have Wolf, Mary, Tim, and Bill.
Thank you. I'm a little bit surprised about the discussion, how it goes on, with the question whether the council is going or might go to in a direction to govern the SG, so in that direction. So I would like to say that for me it's very clear. The councillors, at least we here from our constituency and stakeholder groups, we are the long arm of the stakeholder groups. So on council level, so that's very clear. And for the NOMCOM appointees, it might be a little bit different. That's one point. So the direction is very clear to me. That means there is no direction towards governing the SGs from the council point of view. But as a councillor, I feel we have our role is a little bit split. That means on the one hand, we belong to the stakeholder groups. We represent the interests of that stakeholder groups. But on the other hand, we have to drive the process. So that means we have to come to conclusions here on council level, to decisions. And that means, so we need some flexibility in order to fulfill that, to coming to that. So what it means is, the understanding for myself is, okay, I have to really be close to what the stakeholder group is doing and what is discussing. But on the other hand, I would like to drive that process, and I wouldn't like to block the process. I would like to find some solutions. And I expect that that trust, that confidence from the stakeholder group as well, that I'm able to do so, to find that. So this discussion process between council and stakeholder groups has to be done more in the future, I think so. And that could be done on that level which you were suggesting. That means meeting with the stakeholder group management sometimes. Okay, that's for the first part. Thanks.
Yeah, I think you make a very important point that... I don't feel personally that there's direction from the council to the stakeholder groups. I think often it's the other way around. That's the way it should be, because the stakeholder groups are the ones that are electing the representatives on council. But I also feel that once they've done that, elected representatives on council, then there has to be some measure of trust. I agree with you there. I think that's an important point for the councillors to be able to do their job. But bear in mind that it's up to each group to determine that. And some groups may... give councillors more leeway and others may not. But in general, I think you have to expect councillors to be able to act with the trust of their groups. Mary?
Thanks, Stefan. And actually, to some extent, Wolf and Philip have made the points I wanted to make, so let me just do a brief follow-up. I think to the extent that the new council is a managerial body, as Jeff said earlier, that does not make us a merely administrative body, as Philip said. But I think underlying all of this is something that Tim said and that Philip said. We are elected representatives. And so my personal view is that I do see the councillors, and possibly the NOMCOM appointees are a little bit different, but the large majority of the councillors as elected representatives are really the bridge between and amongst the different stakeholder groups of this SO. We have votes. There will be some lobbying. There may well be that horrible word, horse trading. And when we have that flexibility and that responsibility on behalf of our stakeholder groups, I think the council is where that kind of discussion, that kind of exchange should take place openly. And if I'm wrong on this, I think I would like to know that from either my fellow councillors or from members of the community. Because then the real question will then be, what is our role as elected representatives?
Tim.
Just thinking about some of Marilyn's points, and I may not fully grasp all of them, but it gets to this, back to the question about, you know, what is policy? Because, you know, I guess, and I'm not arguing that this is the case, but I guess I could see where someone could make a case to say that, you know, the overarching framework of a constituency charter is a policy. And so the GNSO would be responsible or be involved in that. So that's just as one example. So I think it's some very good points, but it's a difficult question to answer, at least for myself right now, as to what, you know, we call so many different things policy, and sometimes it seems like it kind of depends on whether it fits into our own agendas or not as to what's policy or implementation issues or whatever you want to, however you want to term it. So I think that's a key element that needs to be resolved or at least needs to be considered, you know, in order to try to delineate where does the GNSO's responsibilities end and the individual stakeholder group's responsibilities pick up.
Who do you think should do that?
I think personally, I think that line is sort of a policy. And so it's something that the GNSO community as a whole should be involved in trying to decide. That's one of the things that concerns me a little bit is that different SO and AC reviews, that it seems like a review is done, but then we kind of get handed down this decision about what changes might need to be made. You know, community is allowed to contribute. But I don't necessarily think, for example, that everything that the BGC kind of handed down in regards to, you know, the improvements for the GNSO were necessarily all improvements or were even necessarily all things that the community as a whole agreed on or that there was consensus for. Can I suggest a better way of doing it right now? You know, no. But I think it's something we should consider at least.
Thanks. Bill?
Thanks. Part of why we were talking about having this conversation was some of the discussions that happened in Brussels and just prior to Brussels, where there were differences among some of us as to what the council members could or could not do together. I remember, for example, heated discussions around the question of whether the council could, putting together a review team for the purpose of diversity, vote on adding another person to the four that the stakeholder groups had put into the pot. And there was a view among some people that council doesn't have the ability to do that, and everything has to go back through the stakeholder groups and get cleared and then come back. There were other discussions as well. I mean, down to the question of whether we could have dinner with the board and talk to the board members without having minutes, where it seemed that some people had different conceptions of whether or not, or of what the relationship between counselors, stakeholder groups, and the GNSO more generally were. I mean, there's different models of what counts as representational democracy and so on here. Involved, and I think my point would be, and you know, you framed it in terms of trust. Trust is fine, but behind trust is an institutional issue, which is what is the model of the relationship. If different stakeholder groups have different ways of approaching this, well, that's fine. But I don't think we should then have any one stakeholder group's model being generalized to the whole council, though. That would be the only problem I would have. For example, in the non-commercial space, I think the way we view the role of our counselors is probably more flexible than it is with some other stakeholder groups. So that when it comes, for example, to the question of proxies, when we were looking at the rules and they say, you have to have complete consensus within the appointing organization on how the person should vote, Well, you know, in the NCSG, we tend to take more of a view that we've elected these people, we trust them, and if we don't like the decisions they take after having discussed with the stakeholder group what the options were, et cetera, people can vote against them in the next election or do something else, but they're not on a leash, per se. And so we get, and because NCSG is quite diverse, we get very different opinions on almost every issue among the councillors as well as stakeholder group members. So that makes it impossible for us to have an enforced unanimity and to have a model where the council can only do what the stakeholder group is telling it in a very strict and directed sense each time. So my point is we just have to find a way to understand, I think, there's a diversity of models across stakeholder groups and to have a framework that's flexible enough that allows, I think, for the important thing to happen, which is that elected representatives should be able to sit together and persuade each other and interact. If we are so constrained that we have to go back and clear every decision or every thought before we can come back and say anything, then the council's ability to actually get stuff done is, to me, quite constrained. And I'm sure some people disagree with what I'm saying.
Jeff.
Yeah, I just want to remind... and
sorry,
so
Marilyn was first, actually.
Oh, I'm sorry. You said
I'm
Jeff.
Sorry. Jumping the queue.
You know, I want to urge all of us to step back and go back to the questions that have been, I think, emerging. And one of those, because now we're beginning to talk about what your rights, capabilities, and responsibilities are in interacting as counselors, but unless we come to agreement about what the purpose and functions are that should be done at the GTLD policy coordination council level, then I think we're missing a big point. And let me just give an example. It may be natural for the staff and board, and I'm not talking about the policy staff here, for the staff and the board to think that they can send all questions your way to come back to an answer from them. But many of the questions that need answered are not GTLD policy questions. And the more you accept that work, the more work you actually put in front of your ability to do GTLD policy. And I think that limits the effectiveness of the council, and it limits the, if I can call it, authority, influence, and contribution of the GNSO as a whole. And once we reach an agreement, you are elected counselors, but every one of your executive committee members is elected by the same people who elect you. They just were elected to do something else. So they have the same elected status, Mary, that a counselor does within their constituency. But they have a different function. And I think it's the function we need to think a little bit about. And I would say that that functional discussion has to happen within each of the constituencies and stakeholder groups. And they need to decide what it is that they think the function and role of the council is. Because the council is only one of the entities, a very important one, but only one of the entities. The constituencies still need to exist, or stakeholder groups, because there's other work that needs to be done. And I'm not, you know, I really want to be clear. I think the policy work is very important. I used to be a policy counselor. But I don't think that the policy counselors can take on the governance and management of the rest of the SO or the constituencies and get the policy work done.
Mary, I think you want to address that. Can I just say that... I also think we have to bear in mind in this discussion the point that Bill was making about being constrained. And the example was that informal session that we had in Brussels with the board. The idea behind that was to just try and help processes along by having better lines of communication. So I know that some people were unhappy with us doing that way, and it was a last-minute thing, and it wasn't as organized as it could have been. But I think it's also a measure of I mean, I'm very sensitive to that argument that Bill was making, that people do need to be able to talk together and sit down and talk to at some point without being too constrained in order to get things done. Mary, and then...
It's very brief. And actually, Marilyn, I don't disagree with you, and I do think it is a different function. And perhaps part of this discussion, what it's showing me and perhaps other people, is that each stakeholder group perhaps views the function of its councillors somewhat differently. And that goes back to Bill's point. And maybe that's some point that we need to be discussing as well.
Yeah, so I want to just respond to Bill and to Stefan. You know, especially with vertical integration, because that's where it arose. I want to be very specific, and I'm going to give very specific examples. People on the council need to understand that they're put into the council to represent their stakeholder groups and not themselves, right, or not their companies. I'm not here representing Neustar. Unfortunately, when you have sessions that are informal about something as contentious as vertical integration was to a number of different businesses and enterprises here, the discussions that took place with board members often involved a counselor's own personal or company interest as opposed to the council interest or their stakeholder group interest. In other words, when a board member asks, I don't want to pick on Chuck because he's not here, but when a board member asks a counselor's view of vertical integration, are they really giving their stakeholder group's view or are they giving their company's view? And that's a very big distinction. If you're being put into a situation where you're being asked a question by a board member, you need to be very clear that the answer you give, if it's a formal discussion, is of you as a counselor. And I heard too many things coming out of that discussion, as informal as you want it to be, that were personal interests, whether they're the interest of an individual registry, even my own members, or a registrar. That's important. That's not something the council should be doing. And that doesn't constrain you at all. I think a very simple rule, one that we could start from here on forward, if there's an ongoing working group or policy development process and a board member asks you, a counselor, what your thoughts are on that policy topic, you pretty much should say, look, there's a working group working on it, and here's what they're doing, and if you want to know, it's in their report. That's what your answer should be, especially in a capacity as a council dinner with the board. Now, if you are always free to give your personal opinion, but make it clear that it's your personal opinion. Because I talked to some board members after, and their opinion was, oh, this is how the council feels, or this is how a stakeholder group feels, because that one person, actually, who was representing themselves, happened to be a council member. So you not only need to view it from your own internal perspective, but how are others going to perceive your statement? And board members don't get much interaction with a lot of people. They're pretty much huddled off into their own silos and meetings. But they're left with impressions when they talk to you that you are, you must know because you're a counselor, or you must be in the in. So I want to be very specific that it was never that the council should not have dinner with the board. That was never the assertion. And I was the strongest one making it. It was be very careful of the topics you talk about and make it clear that your answer is not as a counselor, your answer is on behalf of your company, or your, you know, make it clear as to where you stand. So I think that's very important, and it's a distinction we all need to make, because I think this discussion got into something very different. It's like a letter from a chair's letter is also something that needs to be very carefully thought out. When the GNSO council chair agrees to sign on with chairs of other groups, they better make sure that their entire council is in line with their thoughts. Because even if it's, well, I'm just the chair and this is just the three or four of us getting together as chairs, the board is going to perceive that as the community feeling that way. And so we need to consider how others take the comments that we as councillors make or we as individuals make.
Thanks, Jeff. I have Wolf, Bill, and Edmund.
Thank you. Just a small sentence to Jeff. Thank you. I agree to that. And I think that is a discussion which should be deeply continued on stakeholder group level. And I'm sure you did that. So after that meeting, if, for example, your stakeholder group, members of your stakeholder group didn't follow that, what you mean. And this should be done on that level. On the other hand, I can understand Bill what he was saying, that different stakeholder groups are treating their councillors in a different way. and the behavior or their habits, how to discuss on council level and to vote on council level in a different way. So and I would like to see that, I understand that, because we are different groups representing the community, the Chinese community here. I would like to keep that flexible as well. But keeping in mind for the councillors that we have to come to conclusions. We should come to conclusions at the end, not just discussing and doing something, but come to conclusions and to be open-minded well in doing that. So, and that brings me to the point which is also on the agenda, what the council should not do, in my mind. So because if we, from my perspective, we could really keep that into consideration, so it may help us to be more effective towards what we should do. So from my experience, I have two examples. One is vertical integration as well. But it is that point when the council was discussing to put forward the report from the working team to the board. And I'm not of the opinion that the council only should, let me say, kind of heating up what is in the report and just sending it to the board and saying, okay, the working group is of that, this and that opinion, rather than the council should bypass its own opinion with regards to what is the opinion with regards to that report. So just delivering a report towards a board is not enough for me. And the result was very surprising that the board decided, without asking the council, and took the decision about vertical integration. So that was really surprising to me. So, and that's really a danger for me towards the role and the awareness of the council on board level for very important issues. The other thing is also what I think the council should not do is just like I pointed out, the last meeting was, for me, was a mess, you know, because there was no result. So that's what not should happen, really. So so we should really think about, you know, how we could overcome such a situation. Thank you.
Thanks, Bill.
Just to respond to Jeff, two pieces of this. One is with regard to dinners. You will be on the council soon, and you will find out quite directly that, as people were saying, it's a very informal conversation. People are drinking and chatting and hanging out. And when somebody from a board in a board position has ever asked me, and it usually doesn't happen, what does NCSG think about X? If there has been a clear consensus among members in our conversations about that, I'll convey that to them. But that's not really the function of the dinner. I mean, I don't think that the board comes to dinner with us. I might be wrong, but I don't think the board comes to dinner with us just to sort of like poll where our stakeholder groups on each specific policy issue. It's really a much more getting to know each other kind of thing. So that's part of why I think it felt kind of funny. On the VI thing, this does go to the kind of differences between stakeholder groups. I mean, we'll be concrete. So, for example, in the case of NCSG, we had Milton and Avery. I can't remember who else was in there. Within our group, we had a diversity of viewpoints. We had no fixed consensus within NCSG on VI. There were different factions of the 200 or so members that felt different things about it and said so in our listserv conversations and our monthly calls and so on and so forth. And I think that some people aligned with one view that one of those two people was articulating, some people aligned with another view. So I think when they made representations that they felt X and Y, you say, are you just speaking for yourself? at some level they're speaking for themselves, but there are people behind them who have expressed support for that idea. But that's the most we can do in a context like NCSG, given the diversity of interests, the nature of the players, and so on. It's not like a private sector stakeholder group where you've got a whole bunch of firms that are in a fixed kind of market position and are likely to be able to have kind of bounded set of interests around something. We've got a vast diversity of interests at play. So it simply has to be understood. Different stakeholder groups are going to operate on a little bit different model. If that is difficult for you, because and I understand fully the desire for clarity about who the hell you speak for, then the best I could say is raise that point at the time and try to get people to be as clear as possible about it. But I don't think we can mandate some fixed set of rules that are going to be equally comfortable to each stakeholder group with regard to that kind of an issue, personally.
Thanks, Bill. Can I? One of the things you said earlier on reminded me I should perhaps make a clarification that Jeff is on the council now as alternate for Caroline, and there's also Constantina Savary that should be here but is held back in Europe with the weather, who will be acting as alternate for Rafiq. Is that correct? Thank you. Sorry, lost my list. Edmund, next.
Yeah, just quick comment adding on what Jeff said. It seems Jeff mentioned that we should, you know, how we should present to the board, but I think it's probably also equally important that the board has that perspective in mind as well. I don't know how we can act on this, but the board perhaps needs to be, especially new board members or coming in from NOMCOM or some other places, they might need to know what councillors GNSO councillors are represent and what their roles are before making certain creating their own perspectives about information they receive in their interactions.
Thanks. I had Alan next.
I guess I find this discussion interesting. As the ALAC liaison, I would suspect that somewhere above of 95% of the discussions held in council, I have not been given any direction on. Every once in a while, there's something where there is direction, and I'll make it clear. And the rest of the time, I'm either speaking somewhere between my own behalf, or what I know to be the general directions from at large. And usually I'll try to make it clear if it's important, which it is. But it comes down to the stakeholder group or the advisory council, in my case, naming someone who they believe is going to speak well on their behalf, not necessarily purely as a robot echoing the words. If you elect a loose cannon to be your representative on council, you get what you deserve. Maybe some people want that. But the bottom line is it's going to vary over the groups, and it's going to vary over time. On the VI group, which probably had the largest number of counselors on it of any working group I've seen, virtually everyone said, I'm speaking on my own behalf. We had registrars presenting completely different opinions from each other. We had registries doing that. We had at large, several of the at-large people were on the free trade, and the others were on the most restrictive proposal that was there. That's the nature of that kind of beast. And if a director at a dinner says, what do you think about something, they should realize that all of them will prefix everything they say, this isn't the board position, but. And it's got to be the same for us, unless we're really speaking on behalf of, which sometimes we are. So it's going to vary. I don't think we can have any rules. And when people pick representatives, they should pick them carefully.
We have 10 minutes to go on this. I have Jeff, Tim, Jamie, and Olga.
Yes, so I think two things. One is, it's not – if some topic just comes up at a dinner, it spontaneously comes up, I understand that. It's not much you could do. But VI was a planned topic because you do go into these dinners – with planned topics of conversation. And now may be different because there's actually a GNSO Council board formal session, I think. That's not necessarily a dinner. But there were planned topics there, and if I were to do something differently, I would have never let vertical integration be a topic, a planned topic to discuss at the dinner. I think that was a mistake, and I think it's something we can learn from because it was an ongoing policy process. And like I said, if things spontaneously come up during a drink at dinner, obviously you can't do anything about that. And, you know, just be clear as to who you're talking on behalf of. If it's just yourself, then say it. The second thing is actually, with Wolf mentioned it, which is a separate topic we should save, which is what is the role as a council when you get a fully developed report from a working group? What is the role of a council in forwarding that on to the board? Is it really just, you know, a kind of a rubber stamp forwarding it on? Or should the council actually have deliberations about the substance of what's in there? I think that's a very important conversation because I think the larger the role the council wants to take on in that, the less of an incentive you have to others to participate in a working group. I actually believe a little bit differently than Wolf, which is I actually think the council should make sure the process was followed, make sure it had the inputs, make sure that the report reflects all the opinions that were expressed, make sure that, you know, all the process was followed. But I don't think at the council level there should be horse trading or anything else on individual recommendations. I think that's why you had the working group do the work it was supposed to do. And hopefully there's a strong enough chair that is able to portray things in a report as to, yeah, we know this working group, but 80% of the working group were registries, and so you got to kind of, you got to make sure the chair did a correct balancing of the different opinions. But at a council level, I don't think that there should be that much discussion and deliberations on the conclusions. Otherwise, why participate in a working group if you're just going to have? Because remember, you talk about elected officials. Each stakeholder group, in theory, elects people or can elect people to go to a working group. So they could be elected officials there too, as well. There too, as well. Sorry, bad English, and I'm an English speaker. Thanks,
Tim.
Yeah, that was my feeling as well in regards to the report that we get back from the PDPs or at times it might be other processes, but primarily the PDPs, that the council's job should not take on the responsibility of adding their personal opinion, whether it's the council of the opinion or the council of individual councilors, whatever, to that report. That it's management of the process, make sure that the process was followed, that, you know, for example, we talked earlier today about working groups where they get started off all kind of hot and then it all trailed off, and maybe in the end there's maybe two or three people actually active. I think that should raise a red flag to the council, is, you know, to make sure that there is some consensus here, and that there was a appropriate representation, et cetera, for the recommendations that are being made, and not, editorializing on the recommendations themselves or making changes themselves. And I think that gets to also something I think that we don't do well at in that regard. And at least from my perspective, I don't see us as a council openly discussing those kinds of things. You know, when we look at these reports, are we examining them for, was the group well represented by the stakeholders in the community, and what was the processes that were followed, and how was consensus gauged, etc. Those are the kinds of things that I think we should be looking at, and that takes some time. So we can't get a final report from a working group 1 week, and then it's 2 weeks out from our next meeting, and then we have a motion and we decide to vote on it 2 weeks later. I don't see how we can do that and say that we've filled our responsibility as a council in managing the process. Some time needs to be given for us to discuss and evaluate that report a little bit more fully. But I think that's our job, not adding our own thoughts to the recommendations or changing them at all.
So I have Jamie, Olga, Rosemary, Alan, and Christina, and Bill as well. Yeah, and Bill, can I cut it off after that, Marilyn? Marilyn, did you want to? Okay, and Marilyn. And then can I ask everyone to be quite brief because we've got 5 minutes left. Thank you.
Well, This is Jamie. And first, I would like to say that I agree that the council is a policy body, it's not a politics body. So, but it reacts to initiatives that come from the SG. So, and it gives the work back to the SGs in the form of working groups. But I would like to share with you some a thought. I think we have much more participation in the council than in the work groups. And this is, except for the VI or the very, very momentaneous issues, I think as a whole, this sometimes empties the working group representativeness. So this is something that we should keep in mind to see if the transparency and the far-reaching work of the policy making is taking place. And I think also we should keep this in mind. And I don't think we should, as the council members, bring or there is a very formal procedure to, and we are a voting body as representatives. But as a joke, I would say that you're giving some identity problems to me. Am I an individual or am I only a representative? And well, sometimes we disagree. And I personally disagree with Wolf, but here we are representing the same group. But I think the role of the council is strictly policy making, and we should not add personal opinions and only vote forward and or give back the work to the and see if the policy making is being kept. That's what we should do.
Thanks, Jamie. Olga.
Very briefly, three of us in the council, we are non-com appointees. And it may seem easy for us. We have different backgrounds. We have different experiences. For some reason, we got interested in GNSO, and we were selected by non-com. And I want to tell you that it's quite challenging because many of you already have an idea of each of the issues that the council is going to work on. But we have to made our minds and see from our experience and from what we have to read and understand from the council how to vote and what to say and how to proceed. So we are kind of independent individuals, but it takes a lot of time and reading. And we are three members. Two of us have vote and one is a non-voting one. Terry is not here with us and Carlos couldn't make it today. And it's Andrea and myself. Thank you.
Thank you, Olga. Rosemary.
Thanks, Stefan. Just quickly, two issues, and I will go right back to the beginning of this discussion. If the role of the council is to focus on GTLD policy and coordination, and then GNSO as a whole is looking at governance and management, then, and I'm just thinking this through, then perhaps some of the issues that we're dealing with, PDP and travel and toolkits and so on, belong with the GNSO as a whole. If they do, then what's the decision-making process to say that's our GNSO policy on travel, say, for our stakeholder groups? So it's, you know, we may need to have that discussion if we're clear that council is focusing on GTLD policy matters and GNSO as a whole body is looking at our own governance and stakeholder management issues. My second issue goes to this question about in regard to transparency and consensus. If there's no role for GNSO council to review decisions, in any way, then we would need assurance when reports come back to council that consensus has been achieved across stakeholder groups before those recommendations come to council.
Thank you. Alan, and please make it very brief.
Rosemary started talking about some of the things, but I think our position may be a little bit different. Council is the only real vehicle linking together the various stakeholder groups, and is the only vehicle that can act as an intermediary between the stakeholder groups, the constituencies, and the rest of ICANN. So council does exist. So there is not, and I don't think we want to build an other body to do travel policy or something like that. And increasingly, unlike the situation when the new structure of council was proposed, ACs and SOs are being asked for opinions from the board, from other organizations on an increasing basis, and we don't seem to have a real way to do it. The ACs, it's interesting, the questions are asked of the ACs and not of the councils. They're asked of the SOs. But the council is the only vehicle there that can speak on behalf of, and somehow we have to be more nimble and be able to respond to these kind of things. I don't know what the mechanism is, but we've got to do a better job than we've done to date.
Thanks. Christina.
2 points. First, I agree that we need to have some kind of mechanism that we've all agreed upon for assessing the working group reports when they get to us. And I'm just curious, Jeff, is that something that your group is working on?
I think that's, speaking on the steering committee, yeah, between the two teams, the working group work team and the PDP work team, yes. So I agree with what Rosemary said, that there needs to be definite indication to council as to whether or what type of consensus was reached in the working group. Yeah.
Okay. I was thinking more along the lines of kind of covering some of the points that Tim had noted, and actually some that I had raised in Brussels when we talked about the RAP group, namely, you know, how many people actually participated, you know, of the people who actually participated, how many of them actually voted on the reports, just to get a sense of, you know, how broad that consensus is, who participated, how broad the participation was in the lake. And if that's not something that is going to be coming out of that group, then I think it's probably something that council or someone somewhere needs to be working on to try and have kind of a standard yardstick.
Yeah, most of the reports that I've seen to date have all the attendance and have everything, all the stats that are in there. It's kind of hard to make a subjective determination as to, well, if someone doesn't show up to the calls, that doesn't necessarily mean they're not following the lists and making their opinions known. So it's kind of a subjective determination, but yeah.
Okay. And then the second point, which is kind of off point, but I don't know that we're going to have another opportunity to raise it, and I just want to throw it out there for people to consider. It seems to me that in the time that I've been on the council, we've become increasingly more polarized, and there seems to be a lot less substantive communication among us, both before motions are developed and proposed and while discussions are ongoing. And frankly, I think that that is having a negative impact on the quality of what we're generating. And I think we should think very hard about what opportunities, what mechanisms, what can we put in place that makes that kind of cross-informal communication a lot easier. In other words, you know, I shouldn't have to say, well, gee, I need to talk to Mary about something, so let me see if I can track down her phone number, and then I'm going to have to make a long-distance call that I'm going to have to pay for. And, you know, maybe there needs to be some kind of standing number that's available to the council for people to say, I'd like to use this to have a call to talk about this particular motion and what my concerns are. You know, at this point, I have particular concerns or want to talk about what the NCSG perspective is or what the registry stakeholder group is, you know, but of course, anybody who wants to, you know, on council who wants to participate is welcome to join, so that we just have an opportunity to actually talk to each other, because I think it seems as if by the time we actually get to the point that we're voting on motions, in many cases, there's a lot of misunderstandings that have become firmly enough entrenched that it's difficult to overcome. And in some cases, it may be just a clear misunderstanding about things that could have been dealt more easily. Just giving the example of the most recent meeting, which I missed, and I was listening to the recording, and I got through the recording, I'm like, I can't even believe that they voted against the DOI motion. This seems to me that it's something that everybody agreed on substantively needed to be dealt with, and if there had been an opportunity to communicate ahead of time about what people's issues were, this would be done.
Thanks. We're over time now, so please keep it very brief. Bill and Marilyn.
Just okay, briefly. Christine, I certainly agree with you that more communication is necessary and would help a great deal. I disagree with you, and we've disagreed about this before, as to how polarized and divisive things are. I don't personally find council to be the seething pot of stress and dissension that you do, and I'm not sure how to bridge those differences in perspective.
It's more,
I think people
it's
have
relative.
Natural differences.
I'm saying it's relative. It's more so than it used to be.
Well, people have different perspectives on some important issues. I think that's natural. I'm having a real problem with what Tim's saying, because the notion that when a report comes through, we should all just zip it and shouldn't add our personal opinions and so on. That doesn't work, at least for us. I mean, maybe it's true. It should be the case, ideally, that in every working group, and there should be ample representation from each stakeholder group that would have been in constant communication with all their peers, and then hence everything that would have come out in the report would have had the complete consensus and buy-in of everybody before it even came to council. But the reality is it isn't going to work that way a lot of times. And in a lot of cases, when the final report does come out, the text is something that when we look at it from the perspective of our stakeholder group or somebody else does, somebody has issues with it. And if they have issues with it, then expressing what those issues are is not some sort of extraneous or illegitimate activity. It's a way of explaining, this is why I would have trouble voting for this. My stakeholder group wouldn't support it. I would seek X, Y, Z changes. And I think that that's reasonable. It's like when legislation comes from a congressional committee up to the full House to be voted on. Eventually, you have different layers.
Is that for us to do, or is that for us to send back to the working group?
I guess I don't think that's for us to do. I think that's for us to note, send back to the working group and say, here's why this isn't going forward at this particular point, and let them have a chance to relook at it. But mm-hmm. Because if it's not going to work, then we need to think of another process, because for example, if we're going to go to that route, then we're eventually going to sneak into where, why use working groups at all? The council can just decide everything. Mm-hmm. We'll have a discussion, we'll take a vote, and we're done. It'd save a whole lot of time, but I don't think that's really the point. And a lot of times the way the council would vote isn't necessarily what we find comes back out of these working groups. Let's send it back, but I don't think we should make the changes and send it forward.
Guys, can I cut that short?
All right.
Because we're way over time. Can I just, before handing over to you, Marilyn, just say that it's been an extremely interesting conversation. The some of the points that I get, I've written down. First of all, we ought to decide whether we want to have a session like this again at the next meeting. I think it's been very useful. I think perhaps we may want to have a look at scheduling another one. I also would like to get some sense of direction on whether the council thinks it's a good idea to have some kind of informal process to talk to the group chairs. And I'd also like to have some input on Christina's idea of having some kind of standing number for informal group calls. So perhaps that discussion can be taken to the list. Marilyn, please conclude.
I just want to say that one of the things I was looking for, and I think we finally began to get there, is a discussion among yourselves, and I think this has to go back to the stakeholder groups and the constituencies, but a discussion among yourselves about whether you actually are satisfied with the proposed approach to working groups, whether you're finding that they are balanced, representative, effective, that they have sufficient input at the beginning in terms of fact-based information that people can make decisions. But the second thing I would ask you to think about and think hard about this is, at one point we fought very hard as a larger community to limit the board's ability to make policy. In fact, we wrote in a limitation that the board could only make policy in exigent circumstances, and that within X number of days, they had to come back to the community. You had a situation on VI where, I think you have to ask yourself, because I'm asking myself, do we actually have a failure of a different kind, and that is that the board usurped your role. And instead of sending it back again and saying, dear GTL, dear GNSO Council, you know, go back to the drawing board, we're going to give you another chance, instead they made policy. So I will just say to Tim and to others about, you know, I don't think you can rubber stamp a report. I think you have to, that's your job as managers and governors of the policy process to add value. I don't think you can take it away, but you need to ask yourself, what's the exigent circumstance in which you would put a temporary policy recommendation in place and send it back? And I don't hear that, I think that's a discussion you guys have got to have.
Thanks, Marilyn. Thanks, everybody. Sorry to have run over. The next session starts at 12, the toolkit discussion. That will be chaired by Olga. And after that, we'll have a working lunch on the Rec 6 motion. Thanks very much. I forgot to tell you that all councillors, please see Glenn for your badges.